What's going on, you guys? Welcome back to another episode of The Avalanche Warning, Season 1, Episode 2. Last time we chatted, the Avalanche were just fresh off of sending Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And while some might consider this free agency period a bit of a boring one for the Avalanche, there's still a lot getting done. I'm Bailey Curtis. I've got Gavin Oseguera and Grant Foster here with me today. Guys, are we thumbs up or thumbs down on free agency so far?
It's gonna be a thumbs down. It's not good.
Not good.
A massive thumbs down.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I'm kind of feeling the same way. I was talking with somebody the other day and was like, this is it, like they're all on their toes. They're like, oh my gosh, everybody's getting signed. I'm like, who? Like I feel like this is, to me, is one of the most bland free agency markets we've seen in a long, long time.
I would agree. Yeah, no, this honestly, like as much as I bag on like maybe like three guys I look at and I'm like, why couldn't the Avs like get that guy or sign that guy? Especially because they signed in markets that are like not as desirable. But really at the end of the day, like I look at the rest of this free agent class and like I look at what the Avs made moves before that, like are they going to sign Brock Nelson or are they going to find a second line center in free agency? No, you weren't. Not with this free agency. No. Absolutely not. The best guy that you could have gotten in Sam Bennett is gone. So I don't have a ton of complaints, but also it's just like I don't know who I'm more mad at, this free agent class or the Avs for kind of passing on some guys.
Yeah, we'll get into Chris McFarland and his antics or lack thereof here soon. First off, though, want to start with the newest signing since dropping this episode. Gavin, I don't know what it is about us dropping episodes or making announcements when big things happen. I don't know what it is, but the Avalanche literally just announced minutes ago that Brent Burns, 40 years old, is that what I 41. Just saw? 41.
He's about to turn 41. He's 40 right now.
Brent Burns, former defenseman for the Carolina Hurricanes, has just signed a one-year deal. Now, guys, when you got guys like Cale Makar and Devon Taves on your team, Brent Burns is not going to be a first pair defenseman like he was in Carolina. Gavin, I'll throw it over to you first. How does Brent Burns fit into this very stacked, top-heavy defensive Avs team?
Well, it's very, very interesting because I was actually just reading Twitter or X, whatever the kids want to call it these days. I'm trying to find the AAV. Desperately, but there is no AAV yet.
I haven't gotten it yet.
But I am looking at people talking about like this dude played 23 minutes a night in Carolina. He was top pair. Like this guy's maybe going to pay 15 now on a bottom pairing with the Avalanche. I was a little worried about it because the dude's like 40. But honestly, I think he can manage. I think he's got the life still in him. And honestly, what you're really looking for, Brent Burns, funny enough, he's like a really good penalty kill guy, but apparently horrific at defense. I don't know how that's possible, but right. I'm not the best at knowing a lot about Brent Burns. Really, our resident Carolina girl in Bailey Curtis knows a lot about Brent Burns more than I do.
No,
he's got the only
beard in the league. That's all I know about Brent Burns.
All I will say, and I know I was telling you about this before we hit record, Kane StatBrand, which if you guys are looking for some really good stats on an East Coast team, go check him out. Great friend. He texted me as soon as the trade got dropped and was like, if you need stats on Burns, I got him. The first thing he sends me, he excelled on the PK last season while having one of the worst statistical seasons on the power play ever. This is a guy, and before I throw it over to you, Grant, let me just tell you, this is a guy who's known, or at least in his career in the past, obviously, you know, with age, it's not going to be on the up and up like all the time, but this is a guy who's known for stepping up offensively. He played on a line with Jacob Slavin, for God's sakes. Like you've kind of got to be the offensive push on a defensive pairing like that. So to read that stat and get that thrown in there is a little, I don't know. It's interesting to me. Grant, I'll throw it over to you.
Well, Brent Burns actually, you know, he started as a right winger when he was drafted by the Wild all those years ago, back in 2003 now, which seems like forever ago. But yeah, he was a right winger way back when. That's why he's in contention for the most goals by a defenseman, even though they don't really count. But Brent Burns really is just he's going to be a good just veteran guy on the bottom pair, and he's not going to be like, he's not going to be like Eric Johnson, where you're kind of hoping that he's not going to crumble, you know, by the 16th minute mark. And honestly, you know, he once was the power play guy. I mean, back when he played with San Jose, he was the number one power play guy. I think when Carlson got there, he moved down to the second power play, or he was with Carlson when those two together were together in San Jose. I think he might actually fit onto power play number two, maybe on the left-hand bumper, because, you know, with Coyle gone, they need a right-handed shot. He does actually have a big, he does have a big slap shot, especially on the left side.
Dude breaks so many sticks a game. It's not even funny.
Well, that's what cost McCarr, and, you know, hilariously, that's what cost McCarr in game seven, but we don't bring that up.
That's behind us.
It's never behind us. No. But Brent Burns is he's the guy you want. He's an older guy who knows what his role has become in the NHL. He's not going to be the first pair defenseman, like you said, Bailey. He's not really going to be a second pair defenseman. I think they actually try to do something where maybe they have Girard and Malinsky kind of as more of a offensive defenseman type scheme with their defensive pair number two. And you match him up with someone like Manson, where you can still kind of keep the playmaking abilities. I know they both shoot right-handed, but that's never really mattered to the Colorado Avalanche. You had like five defensemen left-handed a couple years ago. I don't think that's really going to matter.
It's a situation a lot of teams are in, though, where they're getting really, really log-jammed with left-shot defensemen. I'm finding that a lot around the league.
Yeah. But Brent Burns he's someone who you can kind of slot between up and down the lineup, and this team
seems that the haters have silenced our Grant Foster for now, but he will not remain silenced for long. But yeah, no, I mean, funny enough, the Avs are one of the rare teams in the NHL to have a logjam at right wing instead of see, he's back, can't keep him down for long, and not a logjam at left left-handed defenseman. So that's actually fairly interesting that the Avs have that privilege, but
right. Sorry, I don't know if I'd call it a privilege. A logjam on either side is not exactly ideal, but
it's better to have. But it's better to have more right-handed D-men than left-handed D-men. Right-handed D-men are harder to find, and they're actually worth more if you want to trade them. If you do want to trade them, I mean, Manson would have more value than Girard, but you know, Girard's 5'10".
I don't know about that.
Now, I will say, as soon as numbers come in, we'll drop an AAV. With the Hurricanes, I want to try to pull up some of his stats here, too, with Brent Burns. He was making $8 million on the first line with the Hurricanes last year. I can't imagine the Avalanche sign him to anything close to that, especially for a one-year deal.
He's 40. No, and
I think with it being the second day of free agency, like if this was signed on the first, I'd be kind of worried about what the AAV is. But with the second day, it's like, let's come down to earth. Let's actually find like a reasonable deal. I love that cap friendly doesn't exist anymore. So we have to like sit here and wait with anticipation as to what the AAV right. is.
Until one of the NHL insiders decides to grace us with their knowledge.
Yeah. Watch it be $7 million. And see the computer just completely disconnect.
41-year-old defenseman. The other thing I do want to bring up before we start talking about some of the other signings and extensions the Avalanche have gotten into, with Brent Burns being signed, do want to mention that Avalanche legend Tucker Poolman and also Avalanche legend Eric Johnson also all remain UFAs. Heading into free agency with the signing in Brent Burns likely means Eric Johnson will not be returning, which I personally will miss the way that he sacrifices himself in front of the net. I think that's something that Avalanche really could have benefited from. They have that with Parker Kelly now, which I didn't realize he was as high in blocked shots as he was until kind of looking over his stats with the Avalanche when they sent their PR email. But Eric Johnson not coming back, I don't know if it's nostalgia or what, but that kind of stings for me a little bit.
Yeah, and it's always tough to see a guy like that. But frankly, I'm kind of waiting on Eric Johnson's retirement announcement.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, he hasn't been good for quite a few years. At Buffalo, he was basically not used at all. In Colorado, he wasn't used all that much when he finally came back here. I wouldn't mind him basically having the same role he did when he came to Colorado and for his entire season in Buffalo, which is kind of just be a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. Like, you get to basically hang around and sometimes play. I mean, that's honestly the most fun gig ever, and you get to make like $3.4 million in the process. But like, it's kind of – that's what I foresee. Like, if the Avs are actually going to sign a guy like Eric Johnson, that's what it should be. I wouldn't see him going anywhere else. Frankly, like, I don't really know what else he's trying to do at this point. All respect to EJ, of course, but he's no Brett Burns. Like, he doesn't really have a lot left in his game left to give. He's already given it. And
I'm surprised nobody's kind of, especially the Avalanche with, like, you know, not having the most ability down in the minors. I'm surprised, like, they didn't try to talk to him about possibly signing a two-way contract where he's kind of, like, bringing up the next generation of Avalanche players, but mainly emphasize more the two-way contract where he's mostly in the NHL, but when, you know, we have our defensemen satisfied, he goes back down to the AHL, because he is that kind of leader. He's been that kind of leader ever since he came here, you know, in the deal from the Blues. And he will never be a stable guy in the lineup again. Just, he's had too many injuries. But I do think, though, he would be very serviceable. Now, is he going to do that as a 37-year-old who honestly doesn't have much to play for anymore? Probably not. But I think if the Avalanche were looking to do something, that could actually be something very beneficial. Because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of leadership with the AHL, unless, you know, Bailey has anything to say about that.
I mean, they've got leadership taken care of down in or up in Loveland, I should say. I'm not worried about the leadership in that locker room not being sufficient enough without EJ being in that locker room. I'm kind of on the same side as Gavin and saying I don't think there's much that EJ has to check off, much left that EJ has to check off of his list as an NHL or just hockey star in general. At this point, it's just kind of milking whatever there might be left in the tank. But to be honest, I think if Eric Johnson were to call it a career this year, he can sit down and say, I am satisfied with what I have done. Maybe take a job shoveling snow in between periods, like he said he would when he first got back after the trade deadline. But I don't think there's much benefit, as much benefit as one might think, in signing him to some sort of two-way deal. I'd love to potentially see him take some sort of position like Cogliano did after he retired, and maybe being, you know, a special addition to the front office of some sort. So that way he's still around the locker room. Not that the guys aren't going to make it a priority to see him outside the locker room. Him and Landeskog and him and MacKinnon are still best friends. He lives in Denver. He resides in Denver. Even when he was in Philadelphia, Denver was home to him. So it's not as though he won't be around after retirement when he does eventually decide to do that. Not saying this happens this year, but not sure there's much left for Eric Johnson to strive after, unless it's like this year is the year to win a Stanley Cup. Let's run it back. But even at that point, the Avs are good on seven D-men. They've got Keaton Middleton as a healthy seventh defenseman. I honestly would check this off of Chris McFarland's list and saying, okay, we've got our defense set.
Yeah. I mean, I still think the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I think you should nuke your second pair. I think it hasn't produced results. it's never produced results for you. Right. You won the cup without that second pair being a real thing or making as much money as it does. But that's just me. But yeah, I mean, do you guys want to talk about the other extensions the Avs made? I mean,
obviously. I was gonna... Who was that second pair back in 2022? Who was the second pair? Because Girard went down in the Blue Series, but and it was Jack Johnson and Eric Johnson on the third D pair.
I think it was Manson and Byram.
Oh, it was Byram on the second D pair. That's who it was.
Which we'll get into Byram here in a little bit.
That would have been the perfect segue.
That would have been a great segue.
All right. Everyone, forget you heard that. We're going to repeat the same segment again.
So want to talk about, speaking of Avs going out, I'll start on the Avs going out before we start on the Avs coming back in. Gavin, I know we talked about Drouin and Lindgren the last time we were on Saturday. You were very adamant about Lindgren not returning to the Avs roster this year, and alas, he did not. Away to Seattle on a four-year, $4.5 million AAV deal. I remember talking with you and saying anything more is somewhere between 4 and 5, I still think would be a little expensive for what Lindgren produced last season. Grant, I know you didn't really get a say since we recorded without you, unfortunately, on Saturday. So I'll throw the floor to you first and saying, is this a guy you kind of had on your radar to return, or is this something you don't really mind seeing?
Oh, I definitely had Drouin coming back. Bailey and I talked about this many, many times. The fact that you're injury prone, I mean, gosh, you played 43 games. You've eclipsed 75 games only three times in your career. And two of them are actually on contract deals, which actually makes a whole lot of sense. But you know, I don't know honestly what you as the New York Islanders can get out of Jonathan Drouin. I think chemistry is the biggest thing, one of the biggest things in hockey. If you don't know where the other guy's going, you're not gonna be as successful as if you don't. I mean, that's why the Sedin twins were so great. That's why Makar and Taze are so great. That's why some of the greatest D pairings like Duncan Keith and Brent Seabrook, that's why they were so great. That's why some of the forward lines like the HVK line with the Pittsburgh Penguins back in like 2016, who put up a bunch of goals. You obviously need talent.
Yeah, and talent is super important. I definitely get what he's saying about it, though. But the problem with Drouin is he's just super injured, and it's never going to end for Jonathan Drouin. It's been that way his whole career. And with two lackluster postseasons, I don't think it's the way to go. But I can't speak for Grant. Only Grant can speak for Grant. And Grant has returned to us. So we'll see what he wants.
I can't believe this. I can't believe StreamYard's crashing this much. At the end of the day, you're losing a guy who in his best season gave you 56 points and his worst season gave you 37 points. One of those was set with 79 games. One of those was with 43 games. I mean, the good thing was that he was flexible. You could kind of really put him with anybody, and he was going to do well. The only problem with Jonathan Drouin, which is the story for quite a few Avalanche players in the past couple of years, is playoff performance. You know, in last year, not 24-25, but 23-24, he only played in 3 games, so you're missing him out there. And he got 3 assists, which is great, but the Avalanche don't need they don't need playmakers. They need people to put the puck in the net. You need more Nichushkins. Like, you have Nichushkin and Lekkonen. That's great. And you're getting Nagus with the goal-scoring touch a little bit. You have Landeskog back, who can be that net front presence once again and get goals that way. But you need somebody to put the puck in the back of the net. And in 10 playoff games with the Avalanche, Drouin had 0 goals, 6 assists, and a -7, which I actually did not know. That's actually really, that puts a big damper on things. But, you know, that's just the player you got with Drouin. He's gone. Someone else can step up now, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And with Drouin kind of going off too, Grant, want to kind of get your thoughts on Lindgren as well. We kind of talked about this a little bit, just you and me downstairs before hopping on. I was kind of adamant on being kind of glad Lindgren was not returning, just for, you know, the price point that he was kind of put at. But
I totally agree with Gavin when he said that he should have been traded. The only issue that I have is that you need physicality in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You need it. Your guys like Sam Girard are not going to cut it for you. Guys like Lane Hutson are not going to cut it for you. They're amazing D-men. They're amazing puck-moving D-men. But did you see a guy on the Florida Panthers who is less than 5'10" on the defensive end? You didn't. You didn't see that on the Edmonton Oilers. You didn't see that on the Stars. You need size. You I can't win in the playoffs without size. And that's what Lindgren gave you.
Sorry, I have a fun little card.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Before I crash again.
No, you're fine. Jay Fresh actually did post an analysis. The only team that has ever won with defensemen that played a substantial impact since 2018 was the Colorado Avalanche. And those guys were Cale Makar, who's barely undersized. He's like 5'11", all muscle, like 180. And Sam Girard, who wasn't there. He got injured playing playoff hockey. No other team since 2018 has won a cup with defensemen that are under 6 foot that have actually played a substantial role, to your point, Grant.
And I mean, how many times do you have to do this? I mean, especially in the later games of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, we all watched it. There were no penalties called in game 7. And whether that be maybe the Oilers weren't having their best game and the Panthers were just absolutely dominating them, which is true, but it also goes to another extent of you got to be able to throw the ball. You have to be able to not throw the body, but you have to be able to keep puck possession in the corners. I mean, if you watch the Florida Panthers, they're one of the best teams in the corners, and because they have guys who are great puck retrievers, and you know, the way they play, it's a really quick shot up to whatever center's on the ice, whether that's Lundell or Barkov, and they create opportunities. That's how they've won for 2 years. You got to adapt.
Yep. Well, with that, and kind of moving away from the guys, the Avalanche did not re-sign, I guess I will say. One of the ones I do want to bring up, though, one of the remaining UFAs besides Jimmy Vesey, who I couldn't care less if he comes or goes. I think he was okay as an extra forward. I don't think there was much of a sample size for us to really judge.
He was really good at getting Mittelstadt excited to play with him, only for Mittelstadt to be shipped off 3 weeks later.
Yeah. Oh,
he was. God. He's been who he's been his entire career, which is forgettable.
I would say underdog. I would say underdog. That's just a fourth line, third line guy. That if you have the liberty to have him, you have him. If you don't, you don't. And that's just some players' roles.
It's not much of a loss if he's not cracking your lineup. I thought he was a great guy, great in the locker room. I love sharing this stat. Jack Drury actually mentioned that Jimmy Vesey was the one that gave him his tour of Harvard, mm-hmm. Which I thought was kind of fun when I asked Jack about that coming in. But besides Jimmy Vesey, Joel Kiviranta is the only Av that remains unsigned. And I will say I was thoroughly pleased with how Kiviranta played last season. And this is somebody that if you can find a way to bring him back, obviously he's not going to be making league minimum this year. He is just fresh off of a $775,000 deal. I'd like to see him make a little bit more. And I think if the Avs can swing that, I'd personally really love to see him return.
Yeah. Kiviranta is great. He also had an abnormal shooting percentage last season, which is why he had one of the best, like, offensively statistical seasons he had in his career. I think he's good. Based off of his contract projections, he wants to make, I don't know how much money. I mean, obviously the Avs had him on a great contract at league minimum. I wouldn't mind if he wanted like $1 million, but when we start getting into the 1.5s, it's a little much for a guy who's only done it once in his career and shot at an abnormal shooting percentage and However, as the season goes on, as the free agency goes on, and he hasn't gotten a deal yet, I like it. It definitely shows that, like, whatever market price he's putting out there hasn't really been matched yet. So it's a good potential for him to come back to the Avs because of that.
Grant, your thoughts?
I wouldn't mind seeing Kiviranta go. I mean, he's great. He scored 16 goals, shockingly, doubling his, you know, season total. Mm-hmm. But there's a bunch of Kivirantas. Maybe they're not as fast. Maybe they're not. Maybe they won't pit. Maybe, you know, they haven't played in the Avalanche system as long. But, you know, if you're the Avalanche, you're mainly looking at your third line center, thinking, how am I going to make that better? And I think one of the best ways you can do that is pull someone up from the AHL. Actually give one of your prospects a shot. Now, we've all seen the Martin Kaut experiment. We've all seen the Tyson Jost experiment. And we've all seen that. The Avalanche have no problem with taking a shot on the guy from the AHL.
And I were actually talking about this earlier, too. What was the final number for call-ups cracking the roster this past
40,
season?
You had 48 different players playing for the Colorado Avalanche. At least 15 of those were AHL or guys on two-way contracts or ELCs.
Yeah,
Kiviranta is great, but if he's asking anything for more than 1 million, you're gone. Like no. We have people who can fill in a job and do a job, or you can find a guy for 800, 900K or a million. You're not. No offense, but you're not the guy that we're looking to always score. If when you do score, it's amazing. Thank you very much. We all appreciate it, but we're not looking for you to score. We're looking for you to be a great penalty killer, which a lot of the guys in the league do. And we're looking for you to just be a guy who can eat up some minutes, you know, waiting for the second and first and third lines to get out there.
I don't know. I personally, with his performance last year, I don't think the 16 goals is as surprising as some people would like to put it. I think he was a gritty player who added some really, really good depth scoring. I don't think that's something you can ever really get mad at when you're looking at a guy who's on a contract like that, putting up 16 goals. I think that's pretty incredible. Moving on from there, though, talking about the extensions, one that we, you know, you and I, Gavin, were really looking at getting done. There was no doubt that it was going to get done. It was just a matter of what exactly it looked like. Sam Malinsky comes back as the sixth D-man coming in, extended for 1 year, $1.4 million. I think that's a pretty decent raise for what he did for the Avalanche last season. He is, besides Samuel Girard, the Avs' only other smaller defenseman. But given that and playing those third pair minutes, I personally really like this deal.
Yeah, I think obviously, the best option for what you do with Sam Malinsky was just give him the qualifying offer. I think he was really good in the beginning of the season. I think he was really good at the end of the season. But in the middle, you have a whole lot of bad that wasn't very good. And he had like two assists or something. He had like three goals called offsides, which was super unfortunate for him. And they were all such beautiful goals, too. And it was really sad to see them all called off. But he honestly is an important piece to the Avs. Obviously, he makes very little money, under $1.5 million. I think it's completely fair just for a kid that only had 15 points last year to be paid something like this. I would love to see what he does. Actually, his defensive metrics looked pretty good. I think Malinsky still has the potential to be like a good second-pairing guy, but that's a little bit more down the road, and we'll have to see what he turns into. But as of right now, I think he's a good third-line guy. And I'm happy he's coming back to the Avs. I think he fits well.
Grant?
Malinsky's good for what he needs to be. Do we want him to excel? Absolutely. Being an undrafted guy and being able to get him substantial games played for you, especially with the cap crunch that you were underneath when we unfortunately had Mikko Rantanen. But now that you have a little cap, and it's nice to see that guys like Malinsky are stepping up and are getting in games. I mean, say what you want about the point totals, but at least he's playing games. I think he also allows you to kind of maybe look for somebody else if you're really thinking you're in a win now mode. I think he's good for someone you can always just kind of still have progressing on the third D pair. However, I will say he has probably the biggest shot on the team to move up in like where he is in the lineup. You have Samuel Girard ahead of you. You have literally all of the opportunity and none of the loss. It's a surprise that guy was still on the second D pair. Unbelievable.
If Samuel Girard has no haters, then Grant Foster is dead.
He says, I have no enemies. That's just a lie.
When you talk about point totals for Malinsky coming up into the Avalanche, this is his first full-ish. No, I don't even want to say full-ish. He played 76 games with the Avalanche this year. Last year with the Eagles, 27 points in 46 games. I think when you kind of, obviously, they're two completely different games. NHL and AHL games, I feel like I'm looking at two completely different situations when I'm looking at each of those kinds of games. And the way Sam Malinsky's kind of adapted in the NHL, he's obviously, again, as we've mentioned, a smaller D-man kind of trying to find a role in the Avalanche, within the Avalanche. And I think he's done that. I think he, as you said, Grant, is what he kind of needs to be. I think when you're looking at a solid player, Sam Malinsky kind of is that for me. You're not expecting him to shine, but you're also, I don't know. I personally really, really like this. I think it's not an overpay for me, which I think was the biggest thing I was kind of looking at. I was almost kind of expecting them to go a little higher on that AAV, and I'm really glad they didn't. Because it gives you an opportunity to kind of reassess going into the cap raise in the upcoming seasons. Gives them an opportunity.
Breaking news. Brent Burns' AAV is officially $1 million.
$1 million base. Games played bonuses could get him another $3 million.
But one AAV against the cap. Sorry. I wanted the update.
No, I appreciate that. Going from 8 million to 1 million is insane.
He's 41. He's made enough in his time.
No. He's made enough. I like the AAV. I don't really have complaints with that at all.
I don't mind that at all. Speaking of other AAVs, under $2 million, moving on to the big hitter of the Colorado Avalanche, coming back in, surprisingly enough, Parker Kelly. 4 years for $1.7 million a year. Talking about solid. I mean, Parker Kelly really kind of shined in my eyes, talking about a versatile player who went from playing fourth line minutes as the center to shifting to wing to playing up when Bednar shuffles lines and being solid anywhere you put him. I really, 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 really like this signing for the Avalanche. I think if there was anybody to bring back out of that UFA list, it's Parker Kelly for me.
Yeah, I mean, I like the guy a lot. I think he's definitely plays with a lot of heart. I mean, I've loved him ever since he took like four shots in one defensive effort.
And I remember to cut in really, really quickly. Sorry, this extension starts next year. So he's still on an $825,000 contract. Wanted to clarify that before. Anyway, continue.
But yeah, no, I've loved him ever since he took like four shots consecutively in one shift. And unfortunately, they still scored and he like got so goddamn pissed, which I would too.
I would as well.
But he was, I like the kid a lot. I mean, he definitely plays the way you want him to play for a fourth liner. He's very good in his own end. They even had him as their fourth line center. But you really saw him start to like be free once he was not forced to be a center anymore and he was allowed mm-hmm. to be a wing. And you really saw why the Avs brought him in. One of the biggest problems I had with the Avs offseason last year was that they didn't re-sign Brandon Duhaime. And that was probably the easiest one you could re-sign. But then they brought in Parker Kelly at league minimum for 2 years. And I was like, well, there's your Brandon Duhaime right there. He plays very much exactly the same, maybe not as big. But Parker Kelly sure believes he's that big and will absolutely try and be, and credit to him. So I really like Parker Kelly. I'm glad he's going to be staying in Colorado. If there's two bottom six guys that I want like signed long-term, it's Kelly and O'Connor, and they're both signed.
I want to throw in these stats before I throw it down to you, Grant. When talking about him being the Avs big hitter of the team, led the team with 161 hits. He had a 72 blocked shots. You talked about that four shot little string that he had this past season. 72 blocked shots, was ranked fifth on the team. The guy right above him, if I'm not mistaken, was Devon Taves. I could be wrong on that, but the difference was him being at 76 and the next guy above him being above 100 in blocked shots, which I think, I mean, that's kind of crazy in and of itself. But Kelly, not afraid to sacrifice the body, was not all that overwhelming. I was not super thrilled with him in the postseason. One assist in seven games, but I feel like that's what you maybe kind of expect.
I mean,
from your bottom six guy.
I mean, you're getting Parker Kelly to essentially try to bully everybody on the other team. Except the problem is the guys on the other team were 6'7", 6'3", and 6'2".
Yeah.
There's no Girards on that team to bully.
Oh gosh, this is gonna have to become a segment moving forward. Speaking of moving forward, talking a little bit about prospects before kind of moving into final Byram segments, and we can officially make that transition. TJ Tynan, Jack Eshon coming in on two-way deals for the Avalanche. Really, really solid prospects for the Eagles this past season. Avs also signed Ronnie Attard, who played with the Philadelphia Flyers last season, or at least in their organization, signed him to a league minimum two-way deal. I don't know if there's anything to add from you guys. I personally don't mind the addition in Attard. I don't know a whole lot about him. But I really, really enjoyed watching Tynan during his, I believe it was 9 games with the Avalanche. It might have been more, actually. Yeah, 9 games with the Avalanche this past season. Scored his second NHL point in November during that stint. He wears number 9, my favorite number, so I'm a little partial to him. But yeah, anything to add there from you guys?
Yeah, just on Attard, a little bit, Ronnie Attard. Mm-hmm. I did look him up a little bit. He's played in the AHL for a few years, put up decent production. Not anything close to like making the NHL in spades, but he should be a good like 8th defenseman, if it really comes to that with your emergency, however depth gets called up. But yeah, just more of an Eagle signing than anything else, but does have the potential to help out an NHL club when things get dire, which they often do for the Avs.
I was going to say if last season's any indication. Yeah.
Thank you for coming back. We'll probably see you in November again. Thank you.
With that said, last thing we want to get into, talking about defensemen, or I guess one of the second to last things, because I wanted to get your thoughts on one more thing, but let's talk about Bowen Byram first. We mentioned him and his contribution to the team during the 2022 Stanley Cup run. Bit of a concussion liability for me, which was my first thought when I saw the Avalanche very briefly linked to him. But it seems like the Buffalo Sabres are listening to offers for a potential trade. Should he come to the Avalanche? I don't know if this is kind of where you were going with your potential posing question, Grant, but should he come to the Avalanche? Should there be room made for him? Is that something you guys would be interested in seeing?
Absolutely.
Okay. He, absolutely. You and I are on very different sides here, and I would love to hear why.
All right, we all know the Avalanche are in a win cup now mode, right? Mm-hmm. We all get that. That's the position that our GM,
the draft capital or lack of it, not signal that to you.
Yes, but we all know we're in a win now mode, right? Now, who's proven that they can help win games in the playoffs? And this is coming from someone who used to actually really dislike Byram. But you know what? He was there. He played games. He was on the second power play when the goings were getting tough for the first one. And I think he actually like had a goal or a pretty influential goal or assist in the Stanley Cup final. And you know, you gave him up. I think you can get him back. What you pay for him is a totally different question. Are you paying the first rounder? Are you paying like a first round pick? Because he was fourth overall. Are you paying a first round to get her back? No, because everybody, I think it's, you know, there's a lot of guys in the NHL who are flagged for being, you know, injury prone, concussion protocol. That's why when we were talking about Drouin earlier, even though he's 30, he's only getting $4 million because, you know, you can't rely on him. Same thing with Bo Byram. I think you can, with the limited draft capital the Avalanche have, I think you can get something for him. Like you have two fourths, five thirds, and three sevenths in the next draft. Now, that's not great, but I think with Chris McFarland's extremely aggressive expansion tactics, you could definitely get that. You can definitely at least get a third, maybe a second out of that if you're willing to trade somebody away, either in the prospect pool, like a guy you're kind of giving up on, like Oscar Olausson, Jean-Luc Foudy, a lot of guys you're thinking about. You have Ivan, who we haven't even talked about, who did play substantial games, who they look to have as their fourth line center going forwards. You have him. You have draft capital that you can go out and get him for. I think it'd be a worthwhile investment. Now, who do you lose? It's easy. You either lose Manson, someone who got you into very bad penalty trouble, even though Mason Marchment folds like a paper. And then you also have Samuel Girard, who is on the end of his deal. And those are your two realistic options. If you want to bring someone like Byram, who's proven he can do it in the playoffs, who's been in your system before, I don't understand why you wouldn't go after him. There's other restricted free agents that are just as good to go after. But I personally like Byram. And I think it would be a waste if you, I think it'd be a waste if you didn't try something.
I will say, with as much as Manson's name was getting thrown around in trade scenarios leading up to free agency, I really, really like the grit that he adds on the ice. Yes, he's maybe a little unreliable injury-wise. He had a couple issues with his wrist last season that took him out of the lineup more than once. But I like he's kind of like a Ross Colton on the blue line for me, to where he does add that kind of grit that you want a player to bring onto the ice. And if we're eager to trade someone in the acquisition of Bo Byram, Josh Manson's not that guy for me.
I mean, he's on the last year of his deal. That's one less player you have to re-sign next year. And the free agency of next year is the Goliath of free agencies. There's guys to get everywhere next year. You could trade Manson away and get yourself a restricted free agent who you can realistically lock up for 5 years at a decent AAV. And then when your cap's at like 104 million, you can go out and get another big guy. Hell, you could even go trade Brock Nelson to get somebody, even though that 7.5 million deal is not that great. Yeah. Especially since John Tavares just signed for 4.2.
Yeah, let's not. That center market is ridiculous this year.
Yeah.
We were talking a little bit about that before hitting record too, and Grant, you mentioned Michael Granlund was on your radar for the Avalanche, and I personally, and I think Gavin and I agree here, that we are very excited. This was not a deal the Avalanche pulled the trigger on for $7 million.
He's having fun on the beach. Gavin, who are you really interested in left? Because there is the big hole at 3C, even though there are reports that they envision Drury as their third line center.
I wouldn't say that they envision Drury as their third line center. The quote from McFarland following the draft said that he is an elite fourth line center that could play a bigger role for us.
Yeah. I mean, when it comes to third line center, I see a lot of people that aren't talking about Ross Colton, which would make a lot of sense for what you just ride for most of the regular season, and then maybe you upgrade at 3C at the trade deadline. Ross Colton did it for a bit in the 22-23 season. Towards the end of the season, it was actually pretty good. He had good underlying numbers as a third line center. I would be inclined to try and make that work with Ross Colton, especially because he's making $4 million. That's a bit overpriced for a wing on your third line. I would prefer him be the 3C and then Jack Drake continue being your elite fourth line center. But if you really, really want to keep Ross Colton as a wing and you want to have Jack Drury, who's only making like
1.7
as a really cheap third line center in comparison. I mean, I think Jack Drury has a lot to give. He was pretty good in the AHL. He's been good in a lot of other leagues in his career. So for him to kind of stall out in the NHL as a fourth line center is a little surprising for me. I think he has a lot more to give.
Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about his faceoff numbers alone. I think he was incredible for the Avalanche.
Yeah, I think he's also kind of been close to third line numbers too. He's been like near 27 points in some seasons. So it's not out of the question that he can be a good third line center, especially being so young. I think he's only like, what, 25, 24 or something like that?
25.
Okay. When's his birthday? Okay, I knew it. I knew he was 24 at the time when I looked at him last time. No, I think, honestly, there's a lot of potential. Are y'all good?
I don't know what he's freaking out about him.
it's gone after dark hours. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think the bottom six has a lot of potential. I mean, you've got four out of the six guys pretty much signed. O'Connor obviously has to come back from his injury. You've got Kelly, O'Connor, Drury, Colton. Really, if you put Colton as your third line center, you only have to worry about two wings. And that's when we get into conversations of, do you go to the Panthers and say, hey, man, how's E-Rod doing? You want to get rid of $3 million that you need gone off your books? Here's 2 seconds or something.
Yeah, fair. Bring E-Rod back to the Avalanche, please. Bring that man home.
Bring the rod back home.
Oh, gosh. Speaking of bottom six, I want to flip up to the top six and talk a little bit about the biggest name left in free agency currently, in Nikolaj Ehlers. He's currently looking for his new home. Reports have said that his choices have dwindled down to the Washington Capitals and the Carolina Hurricanes, but, comma, and the Colorado Avalanche were in that conversation at the beginning of free agency. With what he's asking and with the hot center market, wing market, kind of going on right now, with a lot of teams still looking to spend a lot of their cap space, Nikolaj Ehlers is not somebody I really had on my radar for the Avalanche, especially given the similarities to a certain right winger they acquired from the Carolina Hurricanes at in January for Mikko Rantanen. I personally really like the fit that Necas found next to MacKinnon. I think their speed really, really complement each other well. I think Necas has a knack for puck transition. I really think he, if he can be, when he's confident, he's got really, really great skill with moving the puck. And I think you don't make Ehlers happen unless you trade Necas away. Now, we've got a whole season to talk about the potentials here as well, depending on what happens with Necas come October. But his playoff numbers are something to talk about. But he had the best season of his career last season. Over, I think, just over or just under a point per game player. Is potentially getting rid of him for Ehlers something the Avalanche could have thought more about?
I think if you are Chris McFarland, as a whole, you do not trade Martin Necas, your crown jewel of the Mikko Rantanen trade. If you give up on him after 2 months, you didn't get the value that you needed. Especially if you're not going to re-sign him. Nikolaj Ehlers is a great guy to throw out there. And I mean, if he were to sign a friendly deal anywhere and wait for the cap to go up, if he were to sign like $5 million and then try to, you know, earn his way into an even bigger contract, like a $9 million contract or an $8 million contract, that'd be great. I think with everything that you went through trading Mikko Rantanen to get Martin Necas, if you turn around and give him up so quickly, what does that say to other players who you trade for? I mean, we've seen it for 3 years now where a guy comes in and he goes out. I mean, Coyle did not last 3 months. Coyle was not here for 3 months. And what does that say if you're a free agent signing?
I'm still upset on it.
What does that say if you're a free agent signing? Why am I going to sign here if I'm just going to be traded 1 year later when I'm trying to move everything? And now that may not mean as much to like younger guys. I don't know how old Ehlers is, but he's probably 27, 28.
He's older than Necas.
He's older than Necas. Yeah. Then like, you know, 27, 28, you kind of have a family going. Like not a lot of guys are really looking eager. Not a lot of guys are looking, 29. Oh, I'm going to be here 1 year. He's 29, really.
29 years old.
I think it sends a very, very, very bad message if you sign Ehlers and get rid of Necas, because then you're sending a message to players who you do sign or you do trade for. We could be like best of friends, but I'll send you later for the first thing I can possibly get. I think that's a bad move. I think Gavin, I would love to hear Gavin though.
Yeah, I think what you were talking about, Grant, is like the Vegas strategy of what you do with players. Like you're either our best friend until you're not, and then we'll ship you out at a moment's notice.
And then we'll bring you back
and then we'll bring you back. For me, honestly, I can see why you would deal Necas if you don't think he'll resign.
Yep.
You get Ehlers, a guy who fits your play style pretty perfectly, I think has a lot of potential to explode in Colorado, especially because he's been so buried with his minutes. Strangely enough, he has not gotten a lot of power play one time in his career. But in the end of the day, it's a more injury-prone an older version of Martin Neches, who's probably also less skilled. And I wouldn't love it, but if you then traded Neches for somebody like a better defenseman, or you were able to get value out of it, fine. I would prefer to still keep Neches. I would agree that there's way too much wheeling and dealing going on with the Avs roster. There's a reason why, like, as fun as it is to see, like, oh, new trade, there's a reason not other teams do this a lot with their players. And, I mean, it sometimes has worked for you. I mean, you revamp your goaltending on the fly and it works out. You go from bottom three to top three goaltending. But with the whole Martin Neches system, like, the Avs seem to be very adverse to signing a guy for like $10 million. And I think that's what's really going on with Martin Neches, is we just had a whole argument over not signing Mikko Rantanen to a lot of money. And for that reason, we're not going to sign you to a lot of money. So they're probably hoping Neches signs for anywhere between 9 to 9.5. I personally would not want to sign him for $10 million. I think that's too much for a guy that is a little unproven in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But
And don't forget, Makar is coming. Makar's up in 26, 27 for that extension. By the way, no trade clause or no move clause at all in his contract.
Nope.
So it is. It's theoretical. It's Makar theoretical
for Rasmus Anderson and like three first confirmed. Yeah.
It's theoretical.
Oh my god! I don't like that this is being put into existence.
No one thought Luka Doncic was going to be traded. No one thought Mikko Rantanen was going to be traded. But look where we are.
Okay, Mikko Rantanen is not Kale Makar. He is not your generational defenseman. No that's offense. True. So
that's true.
I'm actually curious about something, Bailey. There's a lot of talk that the Avalanche should get creative, like all these teams in the cap crunch, that they need to get creative with restricted free agents. You just saw that with the Hurricanes getting Keandre Miller and then signing him to a questionable contract.
I personally really like that for the Hurricanes.
What do you think is the best course of action right now if you don't have Kivi Ranta re-sign, if you don't have EJ resign, if you're not looking to extend Natchez, if you're looking to go in totally different directions, who is the creative option that you would go for if you were to reconstruct one part of the team?
UFA or RFA?
Either.
Call me biased, okay? I was talking about this with somebody else, actually. Give me Jack Roslovic. Give me Jack Roslovic every day of the week and twice on Sundays. This is a man. Let's take a look at this. I was just, I have to pull up some stats.
This might have been a mistake.
This is a guy who the Hurricanes had signed for $2.8 million last year. Had incredible numbers, especially to start out the season. Let's talk about his most recent season with the Hurricanes. 81 games played, 22 goals, 17 assists for 39 total points. You're talking about a guy who spent his time split between the Columbus Blue Jackets and the New York Rangers last year and totaled 23 in 59 games. I could see him potentially getting a little bit of a pay raise if he doesn't stick around 2.8, but I think that's a fantastic guy to add to your bottom six. Call me biased, but I think that it's a great guy who can step up. He can move the puck. He can add to the bottom six playmaking. He's a great depth forward who's played on a great depth team. I think he's got incredible speed. And for 28 years old, I don't think you're going to get somebody much better who can potentially slide into this as system as well as Jack Roslovic might be able to.
Gavin, what about you?
I think the name of the game, looking at all the free agents and kind of coming down from my hysteria, is the fact that, like, trades are the name of the game where the Avs are going to find their benefit. And they got capital when they traded for Charlie Coyle, or away from Charlie Coyle and Miles Wood, thank God. And they are now in basically a position where they have some decent draft capital and they need to make moves. Like, Bailey, to your point, Jack Roslovic was a guy you looked at. who is a very, he's actually pretty interesting as well. I was looking up his stats while you were talking, and yeah, he's an interesting guy. A lot of the RFAs that were my favorite were all second line center guys, like so, like Marco Rossi.
And oh my God, Marco Rossi to the Avalanche. Could you, if the Wild don't get that done?
Well, it's already speculated that they don't, that they want to move on from Marco Rossi. It's already speculated that the GM doesn't really like him. That's why when I was listening to Steve Dangle, SDPN, they were talking about the Maple Leafs getting in on Marco Rossi because they weren't thrilled with how he was, like, they weren't thrilled with him being in the Wild system because he's only a 5'9" center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't really know about that, but I would very much have a hard time seeing anyone want to play for the Leafs right now, especially with the whole Marner thing.
Let's go Leafs, baby. Let's go Leafs.
Oh, God. Are you kidding me?
That's why it's your conference team right now.
Sometimes hey. I like saying the word 1967 to just send Leafs fans into a fucking...
That's my Atlantic Division team, baby. Let's go. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, nice, yeah. Nice save. Right. with that said, some last minute kind of things. Avalanche Prospect Development Camp wrapping up tomorrow. Not any huge names. I think Francesco Dell'Elce and Linus Funk, as we've learned, is how his name is pronounced, which I will give you guys insight in saying the Avs media was very disappointed when we found out that is how you pronounce his name. It is not Funk.
I'm just going to call him Funky Kong. He's Funky care. Kong from now on.
I'll call him Funk all the day.
He's Funky Kong from now on.
Funky Kong. Yeah, both of those prospects, with Funk being drafted in the CHL entry draft. Super excited to see him in London, Ontario this upcoming season. So yeah, that's wrapping up tomorrow. Just got a note from Avs PR that we should be talking with Chris McFarland following development camp tomorrow, which should wrap up around noonish. Might also be talking with Brent Burns tomorrow via Zoom. That is still TBD.
You mean Bubba McFarland?
Oh my gosh, we'll talk about that later.
Booger man.
With that, then we get a almost 2-month break until the anticipated start of training camp. Then we've got that whole situation to look forward to. We've got our prospect tournament coming up, I believe in September, and then beginning of the season. All we're anticipating from there is a schedule drop, which I am on the edge of my seat for. With all of that news said, Gavin, I'll throw it over to you first. Tell the people where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me over at Avs Digest. We're a YouTube channel, if you guys know what YouTube is. I'm sure you do. But yeah, we do some fun content there. It's definitely shorter form. Talk about different pieces of news. I have stuff up on the Charlie Coyle trade. I actually just did a video about grading all of the recent trades that the Avs did and just assigning them letter grades. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, find me over there. Get I also work peek. With a co-host. We're cool guys. We make cool shit. So.
Give them a sneak peek on what you said.
Oh, goalie trades are an A. Charlie Coyle trade is an F. That trade sucks. Trading four and dealing him away. Dealing him away is an A plus because that contract was horrible from the beginning. Thanks, Bruins.
Okay, Brad Marchand. Grant. Not that you have very many socials to plug, but anything you do want to plug?
I do have a Twitter. If you see someone, ranting about, you know, what's going wrong with the Avalanche on a day-to-day basis with a lot of anger-fueled tweets, it's never being called X. I'm never calling it X. It's always Twitter. I'll link it in the show notes below. But if you really want to hear someone just be really, really angry, kind of like Steve Dangle, he's my idol, my inspiration. And, that's where you'll find me.
As for the podcast, before I get into where to find me, you can find the podcast over on X or Twix, as good friend of the podcast, Cat Hunter, likes to call it, over at Abs Warning Pod. Be sure to follow us over there for breaking news and episode drops, anything regarding the podcast or stuff going on with the three of us. As far as I am concerned, you can find me over on X at Bailey Curtis, and that is Bailey with two Y's. Find me over on Instagram at Bailey Lynn Curtis. I do write a little bit for the hockey news. I am the resident Colorado Avalanche beat writer and site editor for the Hockey News' site, or at least the Colorado Avalanche site. Find me over at thehockeynews.com/Colorado Avalanche to find latest articles with breaking news, think pieces, anything related to the Colorado Avalanche or the organization and affiliates. You can find me over there at the Hockey News. Feel free to go through, leave comments on articles. I would love to chat with you guys over there. In the meantime, that's going to do it for this episode of the Avalanche Warning. And I will leave Brent Burns with a piece of advice or something to think about as he moves into his position with the Avalanche. Just to let you know, my friend, number 8 and number 88 are taken. We'll see you guys next time.